Welcome, everyone. It's Parkside Today, featuring conversation and interesting discussion with members of the UW Parkside Learning Community. I'm John Melke, Director of Strategic Communications. It's my pleasure to welcome UW Parkside Associate Professor of Business and Executive Director of International Affairs, Abby Kervilla. Abby, thanks for joining us today on Parkside Today.
Thank you, 101.5 WFTZ. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for having me.
I'm glad you enjoy being here so far.
We'll see. I love it so far.
So far, yeah. Abby, one of your responsibilities with the university is to increase the number of international partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why that's important to UW Parkside.
Well, we, first of all, you know, celebrate a little bit of what we have done so far in the last few years. I think we have significantly increased the number of partnerships at UW Parkside, and we have some amazing locations that we've never, you know, sort of explored before, including places like Finland and Russia and, you know, renewing Italy and Germany, and then while having newer partnerships in traditional countries like China and India. So those are what we are celebrating now. In terms of why it's important, I think internationalization at any university or any community is critically important for multiple reasons. That any contact that we have that exposes us to something that we are only familiar with, you know, really changes our own mindset, improves our understanding of the world, increases our horizons, and allows us to see the world in a different way. And that is what we are trying to accomplish here at UW Parkside.
What's on the horizon in terms of more UW Parkside students traveling to international locations, more international students and faculty coming to UW Parkside?
There's already a lot going on. In terms of study abroad, we've significantly increased the number of students that have been traveling. I think last year saw the highest number of students that actually traveled abroad from UW Parkside to multiple locations around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, that year, this fall, we saw a significant increase in the number of incoming students to UW Parkside.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in both fronts, we are doing some outstanding work. You know, everybody who's engaged in the international work at UW Parkside has a lot to be proud about, because the number of incoming students are increasing and the number of students traveling abroad is increasing, and that's bound to grow.
Mm-hmm.
We have continued support from the community, which is critically important in order to be able to ensure that grows, and more interest from the community that want to support these kind of experiences for students.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have support in the form of scholarships for students who want to travel from abroad to come and study at UW Parkside. So there are some great examples, and at some point I can go over that. But on a general level, there is increase on both fronts. So the mobility is just fascinating for us.
So when you're speaking with a prospective student, maybe their family, is it something where you can sense that the opportunity to study internationally may be important to them, or is that more maybe a point that you're bringing out and making sure that they're aware of that opportunity exists here at UW Parkside?
I think both. So I can give you share a story from a couple of days ago. There was a student from, his name is, I don't know if I'm allowed to share names here, but.
Sure, why not? We'll find out.
Massimo, you know, he came over, and, you know, typical Italian name, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm taking a group of students this summer. It's going to be my sixth year taking a group of students to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he is from the southern part of Italy. And I, you know, shared what we are going to do in this summer with traveling all over the country and especially focusing on the southern part of Italy, invited him to come along. And this is what he says. He said, I want you to talk to my dad. Mm-hmm. So I said, why don't you call him right now? You know, so he picks up the phone, calls the dad, and, you know, we go over this entire itinerary and what we're doing in all of Italy and southern Italy, and, you know, touch something that's so deep in his heart, because his father came from the southern part of it.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so when he heard about what we are doing, you know, he was just fascinated. He said, first of all, can I come along? You know, the father. And then he said, in ending the conversation, he said, what can I do in order to totally ensure that my son is able to go on this study abroad course?
Wow.
So for the son, now what they're doing is they're trying to contact their relatives in that region and to see if he can stay back for a week after the course is over and spend time with family, see where his grandfather was born, you know, things like that. So that's one level of trying to promote. The other level is a lot of our students have not traveled. They do not have an international experience. A lot of our students are first-generation students.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, it is important in order to be able to get them to try to travel, you know, share what we are doing here at Parkside, invite them to come to the study abroad office more,
mm-hmm.
you know, get them to engage with international students in some form or the other, but really build a curiosity in order to explore the world. So the answer is, we have to do both in order to continue doing what we are doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about, I mean, traveling today is much different than it was a number of years ago. More, I don't want to say hassles, but definitely more maybe barriers to traveling easily around the world. What's some of the biggest challenges you face when you are taking students to Italy or India or any other part of the world?
So I think first of all is more of a psychological challenge. I think the finances is a different, you know, comes next, right? So the first idea is always to encourage the student or the parent to think beyond the Southeast Wisconsin region and mm-hmm. say that, yes, I want to travel and I want to explore the world
mm-hmm.
and I want to do more than what I'm doing at, you know, in one location that mm-hmm. really enhances my education. So I think once we cross that psychological barrier, then I think we are able to support more with some of the resources that we do have. So the state of Wisconsin has a study abroad grants. We have major donors who have supported this kind of initiative in trying to send students abroad. We have the, you know, the Italian Foundation that significantly supports students going to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
We have other people who've come forward who want to support that. So it's you know, I think the primary barrier is selling the idea. And then what usually I try to tell the students, I say, you know, just declare that you are going to go and other things will follow. And it's hard to say that. That's a lot of, you know, I live my life like that. So I feel like that's a, you know, sort of a mantra for me. I want to do it. And then, you know, the universe comes together to make it happen, you know. And I think for students, it's the same thing. Once they do decide to go, sometimes it's a GoFundMe page. Sometimes it's family coming together and saying, hey, let's put together a graduation party for you. You know, it's not going to be an official restaurant where we're going to spend hundreds of dollars, but we're going to invest in an experience for you abroad. So it's important for, I think it's important for students to just declare first that I'm going to do it, and then I think things will follow. And we do have resources to support that.
Right, right. Now, you talked about the trips that you've made to Italy with students for study abroad. And a few years ago, you took a group over, and from that experience comes what I think is a pretty incredible internship opportunity with CNH, where Parkside students were able to work at CNH at their facility in Racine, and then just last fall went to Italy to work at the CNH facility in Lecce, Italy. Tell me about how that came together.
That is one of our greatest stories, and I love sharing that story. Every year at the end of the study abroad trip, we have a, you know, closing toast, right? Last dinner that we are all, and usually it's at Lecce where the CNH Fiat plant is.
Mm.
At that dinner, you know, we talk about everything that we've learned and everything that we've accomplished. And so that was one of the dinners where I remember clearly talking to Christian Hansen, who, and I said, you know, Christian, you are such a leader, which is what I noticed in the 2 weeks that, you know, 2.5 weeks during the trip. Because he was climbing every mountain, and he was the student who everyone would congregate to by the end of the day. His room was the one that was always crowded because everyone wanted to be with him, you know.
Uh-huh.
And there was a sense of leadership that he really exhibited, and I asked him to explore that and see what that would take him in his understanding of the world. And then he said, you know, I've never even thought about myself as a leader, but this is something that's, you know, new in my mind that I need to explore, and I'm fascinated by Italy. I want to do something more. That same trip, we were in the CNH plant in Lecce, which is a sister to the CNH, you know, Racine plant. And we pitched the idea to the manager and the plant manager, in fact, and said, what if we had interns from UW Parkside, you know, working here? How would that help you?
Right.
And on that side of the world, it was the same thing. He said, first his response was, it'll be great to see people speak English over here, you know, so to get students coming over here and them being involved with the workforce in the plant and interacting in English, I think that'll help everyone, number one. But technically, I think, you know, that'll significantly improve in our ideas and objective examples that students might have in how we are doing our operations.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back, the first thing we did was reach out to the COO of CNH, Brad Cruz, and I'm so thankful to him that he's literally took that upon him as an example of what of something that needs to be accomplished. And so CNH Racine hired two of the students from that year on an internship. It took a while for them to get their visas for Italy because Italy would not give them a visa unless they spent more than 6 months in the Racine plant, or I think it was maybe even more than that. And the CNH Racine plant said, you know, we'll do that. We'll do even more than that. They ended up hiring these two kids for about 2 years before the visa for Italy worked out.
Yeah.
And then both of them went to Italy and, you know, literally just came back, like you said, a couple of weeks ago. I think that's one of the most amazing stories that has happened from, you know, a little study abroad trip that students were willing to explore and go beyond. And it ends even better because CNH ended up hiring Christian as a logistics engineer, and he's permanently located now in the Racine plant. And he had different dreams for his life. You know, he wanted to start with a simple internship, and, you know, he's doing way beyond, and I'm so proud of him. So we should all be very proud of him.
I know I've had the chance to talk to both of them since they've returned from Italy, and, you know, they just loved the experience and talk about, and I think not only loving the experience, but appreciating the experience, knowing what that means to them as a younger person today, where that, how that helps them in their career journey, you know, for the next 10, 20 years, whatever it might be, that experience will definitely change their lives.
You're right. And I will add that it's not just for Italy, but for any study abroad experience that, you know, any student has with any faculty member that they go with. They do come back with a renewed understanding of the world. They come back learning what hospitality could be in another country. You know, you travel to another country and there's a home that would just open up their doors and welcome 12 new students from another country that they've just met for the very first time, you know. And there are so many examples. You know, there's Brazil a few years ago, and I'm sure that several all of our faculty members who've traveled abroad have examples of this. We were sitting at a football game in Brazil. And the row in front of us, they turned around and talked to us and realized we are, you know, brand new, 10 people from the U.S. That same night, they invited us to come and have dinner with us, you know. So we took a taxi. It was an hour away, you know, and so I don't know what this means in terms of liability or anything, but you've got to accept experiences like that and invitations like that. So we traveled an hour in three taxis, got to that house. The mom, she made pizza for everyone. We were there till around 4 a.m. singing laughing and sharing jokes, you know. That's what makes any international experience so fascinating and so enjoyable.
Absolutely incredible. What when you look at thinking about starting a partnership with an academic institution in another part of the world, what is it that goes into kind of the planning process, or to say, we'll use Finland for an example. When you establish the partnership in Finland, why Finland? How did Finland come up as the as the place to establish the partnership?
You're right. Well, I think the first thing is faculty champions. I think what brings our partnerships to UW Parkside is usually a faculty member that has had some experience with that university or institution, either as a visiting professor or having delivered a guest lecture, or even, you know, being the alma mater for that student, you know, for that faculty member. So it usually comes through our faculty. And I think that's wonderful, because then you continue having a faculty champion to shepherd that relationship. As a university institution-wide, I think there are a few things that we look for in establishing a, you know, formal partnership. It's first of all, alignment with our objectives. You know, does that institution, regardless of the size, sometimes the size too, but does it align with what we are looking for in terms of growing? The fact that we have faculty champions definitely helps with that. Just awareness of our own demographic. You know, we have a first-generation demographic at our university. We have diversity. We have something unique at UW Parkside. I think we are not competing with Harvard in terms of, you know, developing an MOU with another university in another country. So we are aware and we are cognizant of the fact that our demographic needs to match, because then it'll be a successful partnership. Making sure that it'll continue to be a good match. So sustainability, you know, what are the factors that would help continue this partnership? You know, how will it continue to do, not just the first year that we celebrate a big, you know, exchange of students, but then what goes, what happens after that? Is there a potential for our students to continue going over there, or for their students to keep continuing, you know, continuing to come every year?
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, reciprocity. So we look at what kind of a relationship is it? Is it mostly one way? But is there, or is there interest on both sides? And it doesn't always have to be reciprocity in terms of the equal number of students going back and forth, because it's always a challenge to get our, you know, students here who might be working full-time jobs to go and spend a semester abroad.
Sure.
But it's been possible, and we've been successful in sending students on a short-term study abroad program. Study abroad office has done an outstanding job with, you know, sending most students abroad. So if, let's say, two or three students come from that country and then they host 10 of our students for a short summer program, then that is reciprocity in a format.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have one of our faculty members that go and they are hosted for an entire week or, you know, a couple of weeks, then that's a form of reciprocity. So we need to ensure that there's reciprocity. So those would be the five or six major factors we look for.
Mm-hmm. Can you kind of tell when you start talking with other faculty or leadership at another university whether it's going to be a fit or not? Or does it take a little bit of I guess, investigating to find out if it will be a good fit for Parkside?
Both. You know, I think there are examples of, on the very first day, you know, this is going to be a natural fit, right? Mm-hmm. And then there are examples where we have to push it a little bit more to see what's the interest and find the true areas of alignment. Sometimes it's articulation, you know, so we can have a general partnership, but unless the faculty have an articulated program that is going to result in students actually in mobility of students, then it's just going to be a piece of paper that we sign on. So Finland, you asked about Finland. I think that was an example of the size was very similar, 4,500 students.
Mm-hmm.
They were first generation students. They were not Ivy League in Finland. The administration and the faculty were keenly interested in a partnership with UW Parkside. They came and visited. We went up there. Then they came back and visited. And then we had a student from there who came and spent a semester. And then we had, I think, five of our students that went and spent a summer over there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think people definitely drive it. But there is, you know, sometimes you know right away that this is going to be a good fit. Sometimes you have to explore more.
Sure, sure. What in the case of some of the places where UW Parkside has a partnership, and I'm not going to try to list them all off because I'll forget someone, but Russia, Finland, Italy, India, what's on the horizon as a place where you'd say, oh, here's an area of the world where I would like to see Parkside develop some new partnerships?
I think it's we as a university, you know, the areas that that there is alignment, that would be one of the areas that we'll definitely explore. And they, like I said, they usually come from faculty.
Mm-hmm.
We can celebrate that we do have partnership in multiple continents. I think in every continent now, right? Because we had the last one with Australia a few years ago. So that was just, you know, far out there. And then we do have a partnership at a very, you know, general level. We need to expand that more.
Mm-hmm.
What is exciting, I think, is Africa. And I think what Dean Otu of College of Natural Health Sciences has done is this new partnership with Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so much more potential than what we can do. Europe, we've had traditionally, you know, Italy, Germany, some of our traditional partners, and now several more. India and China, in terms of on a national scale, those are the countries that send the most number of students to the U.S., that generally have the most number of partnerships. This year has been the year of India, which, you know, everyone has traveled this year from the provost to the chancellor and, you know, multiple levels. China has been a partner for a few years now. I think what is exciting is Africa now. And I think Nigeria is setting that going to be the flagship university, Ebonyi East University that Dean Otu is working with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there will be more. So I think it'd be great to see Cameroon, for example, you know, great, great location. Egypt, I think more countries from Africa. I think that'd be exciting for UW Parkside.
Right.
That's the diversity I'd like to see more too on a personal level.
Yeah. So as Abby Kervilla, the instructor, and Abby, the person who's helping to grow UW Parkside's global perspective and global footprint, how do you balance the education side of what you do versus the responsibilities of developing these important global partnerships?
Oh, that's a great question. I think you have to enjoy both, right? I mean, it's not, I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think it's hard to say, you cannot really separate the two, you know. Mm-hmm. I think you become a better teacher when you do more international partnerships. Mm-hmm. And when you do more teaching, then you are able to bring more of these partnerships. So that's, you know, that's sort of, you know, in a nutshell. Several of the partnerships are because of the teaching experience, you know, whether it's Finland, you know, being a visiting professor there, mm-hmm. And in Russia and in Germany and a few other countries. But then so that's how the, you know, the international footprint on, you know, personally my own level, I think it's helped with that. But that footprint or the international experiences also lead significantly to improved classroom teaching, I think, because then you're able to share more with your students about programs like this. And then I'm able to think about more destinations on a personal level. I'm able to, you know, think about classes, like designing a program. For example, the Doing Business in the Caribbean. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But
right.
That was a sort of a stopgap arrangement for students who are not ready to make a big leap and go to, you know, India, for instance, right, or to China. Mm-hmm. But they can, or to Europe. But to think about something that's still outside the U.S., but that they can wrap their minds around. You know, okay, this is a week. Mm-hmm. It's still outside the United States, but it's still in the Caribbean area. You mm-hmm. know, so you can go to Jamaica and you can go to Grand Cayman Islands and come back in a week. And it's not going to be sort of so overwhelming that.
Right.
But the good thing about that is that once you create some of those smaller experiences, many of those students, they want to go on a larger experience. So there's an example of a student who went on the Caribbean coast, ended up going on a, you know, doing a short-term study abroad of 2.5 weeks. And then an example of a student who did the 2.5 week trip, deciding to go and do a semester-long trip. So, and that is our goal. You know, we want students to spend more amount of time at multiple locations. And these are the steps we are taking to in that direction.
I know when we were first, you know, sharing the story of doing business in the Caribbean, I thought, why wouldn't you want to go to the Caribbean during winterum
in exactly,
southeastern right. Wisconsin. It seemed like a rather easy decision to make there. But talk a little bit about when whether it be students or faculty or leadership from other institutions are coming to Parkside, coming to southeastern Wisconsin. What sort of reaction, if someone hasn't been here before, what do they talk about? What do they see that maybe sticks with them, you know, when they go back to whatever country they may be from?
Yes, I think first it's our students. I think they are just, you know, fascinated with how friendly everyone is. And, you know, people are going out and saying hello. And the campus itself, I mean, we are proud to have such a beautiful campus over here. I don't think many campuses in the nation can boast what we have over here. I mean, it's so green, it's so vibrant, you know, and I think that really stands out. If someone is visiting for the first time, they're just blown away with how green and how fresh and the facilities that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of international campuses do not have, for example, the sports facilities that we have. They do not have an indoor track. They don't have, you know, the level of the gym and the facilities that students have beyond their intellectual development, you know, like physically, how do we help students develop? So those are, I think, definitely key areas that that people go back with.
Mm-hmm.
But then also seeing our class sizes. So the ratio of faculty student ratio and the kind of interaction that we have with the community, because we have the community partnerships that we are known for. So how students are applying principles they study in class towards the community, helping a small business, a nonprofit, a government agency. I think it's never one thing, but I think it's a mix of all of that truly makes UW Parkside just an amazing campus to be at. And that's what they take back with them.
It must be an interesting trip for someone to come from when you look at some of the parts of the world where we're going to visit, where the population is much larger than it may be here in this area, for them to come and see an area where you look around campus and we're in a fairly unpopulated area, mm-hmm. in terms of perspective from others. Does that come into play at all? Do you see people saying, wow, there's like a lot of room around here, or where coming from a different, more populated area?
Absolutely. I think, so if you want to hear it, guess what the Chinese students talk about our campus the most?
I don't know. What okay. do they talk about the most?
The fresh air. You know, they're Beijing. Yeah. Beijing has had trouble and continues to have trouble with the quality of air.
Sure.
And so 700 acres of, green grass.
And fresh air.
They are the happiest over here.
Wow.
Students from other countries, I think they, so that's, Chinese students, but other countries, that they are just fascinated with our facilities and the amount of support that we have and what our students have in terms of, even in terms of housing, but beyond that, the amount of space that they have to, go around while being not too far from any of the major metropolitan mm-hmm. cities, Chicago, Milwaukee, not very far away.
Right.
But just life on campus, I think that is what they enjoy most. And you're right, the space is definitely a big seller for us.
So. Sure, sure. So we've only got a few minutes left. I've enjoyed the conversation, but tell us, what do you say to the parent, the family member, the student who says, I might want to travel abroad? What do you say to them?
Well, I am an example myself of somebody who's traveled abroad. I'm mm-hmm. from the other part of the globe, and so I'm here, and I think my life certainly has become much more richer being in the U.S. and traveling around the world and, doing what I do. I consider myself really blessed that I have the opportunity to do what I'm doing and serving in this capacity. To any parent that is thinking of sending their student or wants to do that, I would say congratulations and thank you for thinking about that. Be aware that this is a transformative experience for your child. This is for the greater good. It's going to develop your son or daughter's horizons. Their resumes are going to look much more better just because they have an international experience in their life. It's going to help them overcome stereotypes. I think it helps all of us overcome stereotypes in our lives. It helps us embrace different types of diversity. And finally, it also helps us come back and appreciate what we do have. So a lot of students who do travel abroad come back and really realize what they do have, and they're thankful for what they do have mm-hmm. while they try to embrace what they've learned from there in terms of hospitality or, any new human trait that they think that they can do better at. So overall, I wouldn't say it's an expense if you're thinking of sending, a son or daughter abroad. It is an investment in their life and in their education and their future. By all means, do it and declare it first, and then the rest will follow. So,
great. Well, Abby, it's been a pleasure having you with us on Parkside today. Good luck with future partnerships with Parkside and international institutions around the world, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me, John. Thank you to 101.5 WIPZ. You guys are doing some amazing work. So I do want to thank the executive board and the work that you do over here. I think that's fantastic. So, and I really do appreciate it. It's been so enjoyable coming and speaking here.
Great. Thank you.